When farmers come to visit, they have really practical questions. They start drilling down on the details of what's important. How are we going to plant this? How do I need to prepare the field? Then finally, how am I going to harvest this and who am I going to sell it to?
That's Dr. Alyssa Collins. She's a plant pathologist and the director of Penn State University's research farm near Landisville, Pennsylvania. Today we continue our discussion of industrial hemp. At Penn State, they're in their second year of hemp trials and research, and Dr. Collins will tell us all about those trials, what they've learned, what they hope to learn, and how their research is benefiting farmers. I'm your host, Eric Herlock, digital editor at Lancaster Farming, and I apologize, my voice is a little wacky today because I'm fighting off a cold. So stick around, and we'll jump right in right after this. Hey, don't forget, there are sponsorship opportunities available, so send us an email to podcast@lancasterfarming.com. Hey, welcome back. So today we are in Landisville, Pennsylvania at the Penn State Farm. And could you introduce yourself for us?
Yeah, my name's Alyssa Collins, and I'm a professor of plant pathology and environmental microbiology at Penn State, and I'm also the director of the Penn State Southeast Agricultural Research and Extension Center.
So what goes on here at the research center? What kind of work do you do here?
Yeah, so the research center exists to kind of ground truth the things that we learn in labs and greenhouses in that setting, and we take it out to the field in real life and make sure the things that we learned in a really controlled scientific setting actually work in real life. And so we do that, but then we also are a place for a lot of learning. So farmers, the public, they come here for programming like workshops and field days, and they get to learn for themselves in the field how the things that we're learning here are going to improve their lives and their businesses.
And this is your second year of hemp trials at Penn State. Can you tell us about the research?
Yeah, so this is the second year of the hemp trials that Penn State is conducting, but it is the first year that the plots have been done in Lancaster County at the Penn State Research Center. Previously, they were up at the Rock Springs Research Center in near State College.
What was the reasoning for bringing the research trials down here to Lancaster County?
Well, there were two reasons to move them down here. One is my colleague who has been leading this charge, Greg Roth, our agronomist, is retiring, and in fact, retired last week. So he was located up at that farm. And so since I'm going to be shepherding it to the next state of being, whether that stays here or whether it goes to a new colleague, I'll keep it going until then. And the other reason for us to move it down here is because there's so much interest in growers in Lancaster County and South Central PA in this crop. And so we wanted to move it closer to where they are, replicate the conditions that those farmers are dealing with, but also make it more accessible to them for programming.
So you find that there's more interest in industrial hemp down here than in other parts of the state?
I think so. We're located in such a nexus of agriculture in Pennsylvania that's kind of a natural. So we're 20 minutes from Harrisburg, and we're, you know, an hour from Philadelphia, and we're easy to get to, and a lot of farmers already know we're here and they're used to coming here. It's not difficult for them. So for instance, last year, Greg had a field day up at Rock Springs and he got a handful of people at that field day. This year we decided to have another field day here in Lancaster County, and it went from an attendance of about 15 to 30 people to 160 people. And we were not expecting that. And it just kind of showed us how much interest is building, and we certainly need to keep our minds open when it comes to where we take this program.
Can you explain the program a little bit? What's the research been about? What have you been focusing on?
Yeah, so this year, we've repeated a lot of the work we started last year because we like to do more than 1 year of an experiment whenever we're doing it in the field. Weather conditions change, we change the locations, soil types and climate is changing. So we are looking at five different experiments this year, and one is just different varieties of seed hemp. So we're specifically interested in seed. And the reason for that is, one, because we know we can harvest seed with the equipment we already have. And two, we needed to narrow our focus. And so we're looking at different seed varieties. We're also looking at different planting dates. We're looking at different planting rates, nitrogen response, and herbicides. So we're interested in seeing where's the break even for this crop? How little seed can we plant and still get a good stand, outcompete weeds? But the less seed you have to buy and plant, the better for the grower from an input standpoint. What timing can we do it at? So this is a crop that maybe could be well situated to go after wheat or barley in a traditional double crop sense. We want to know, does that impact our yield? And if so, how much? Is it still tolerable? We also would like to find out, you know, a lot of people say, well, this crop is a great crop because it requires no inputs. You don't have to use any pesticides or herbicides or fertilizer, and it just grows. Well, that's probably true, but you're probably also not going to maximize your yields doing that. And so we want to find out where that point is. So we looked at how much nitrogen gets you a better crop, and at what point does adding more nitrogen not buy you anything? And finally, weed control is probably one of the most challenging issues in this crop. And so we're looking at different mechanical ways, yes, but we want to be poised to understand what different herbicides can do with this crop if that opportunity presents itself, which maybe in the future it will. So we wanted to have that data already ready to go when the time came.
So what have you learned? Can you share some of those results with us?
Yeah, so we just had the opportunity to summarize the research results from this year and compare them to our results in 2017. And we learned a couple of things. Some of the things were reinforced from last year. So let's start with planting date. So we wanted to know, okay, what is the best planting date and what is an acceptable planting date that can still get you a decent yield? So this year we found that, okay, so we planted on May 30th, right around Memorial Day, and then we planted on June 19th. We also planted at a later date, but that later date we had no emergence, basically. Just a few plants came up. And a lot of that had to do with that one little instance of hot, dry weather we had at the beginning of July. So really, we had data from two planting dates this year, end of May and late June. And we found we got better yields and better height. If you're interested in fiber, we got better height at that first planting date, but we still got acceptable yields in terms of seed production and height from that June planting date.
The same varieties?
In the same varieties, that's right. They all kind of, they all fell out in the same way. We're dealing with five varieties. We had six varieties last year, but one tested too high in THC, so we decided to remove that from the program. And so the five varieties that were left are all seed varieties, and they were bred by a Canadian company, and they are bred specifically for seed, but you can probably dual purpose some of them. There was one variety called Piccolo, which, given the name, kind of makes sense. It was very little. But that did not outcompete weeds well. And so we think the taller varieties that we work with are going to work better for our growing environment. But the CRS-1 from this one particular company was the one that performed the best in both years. and we think the taller ones are going to be better for us. Another thing that we looked at, like I said, was seeding rate. And so we looked at seeding at everywhere from 15 pounds per acre to 45 pounds per acre. And we wanted to know how little seed could we plant and still get a good yield. And we found that we're probably looking at in the range of 30 pounds for most varieties, at least out of the ones that we were looking at here this year. And looking at how much nitrogen these varieties need. Now keep in mind that these are not fiber varieties, so we weren't trying to get a whole lot of biomass. We were looking at simply how much seed can we get. And so we found that most of our varieties did really well with about 100 to 150 pounds of nitrogen. This nitrogen was all applied up front.
With the variety that tested high in THC, was there any indication beforehand that that was going to happen?
Well, it's kind of a funny story. So these plots in 2017 were located on Penn State property up in Center County. And so Penn State Police do, you know, little surveys of the area just to make sure everything's safe and accounted for. And one of the public safety officers decided to use his field test kit to test one of the varieties because, you know, it was an accessible field and it was on Penn State property and was curious. So he found that it did test positive on his field kit. And so he alerted Greg Roth, who is my colleague running the study, and Greg said, uh-oh, we better check into this. So PDA comes and tests all the varieties in the permitting program anyway. And so they did test this variety and it tested, I don't remember the actual reading, but it did test too high in both instances. And so we decided just to not risk it. That's part of the reason we do this, is so that farmers don't have to make that really expensive mistake, because you don't know it's going to test high until way late in your crop. And that can be a critical point for that crop, and your money's already sunk.
Why wouldn't those THC levels be known by the seed supplier? Or do those levels change from generation to generation in the plant?
So THC is a plant metabolite. So it is a byproduct of other things going on in the plant. And like a lot of other chemical compounds that we get from plants, for instance, caffeine or nicotine, these are produced by the plant in response to things going on in their environment. So the plant is trying to defend itself maybe against getting eaten by a bug or disease pressure, or maybe it's drought stress. And as a result of that, the chemistry in the plant changes. And so there's a lot that we don't yet know about how different environments and different stressors are going to drive up the levels of THC or any compound that we do or don't want in the plant. And so this kind of testing is important, because we want to stay well below that threshold. And any varieties that kind of skirt the line probably aren't ones that we're going to recommend to a grower.
Can you tell us about pest control? What sort of pests are going after industrial hemp?
Sure. So this plant, like I said, a lot of folks feel like it's a really easy one to grow because it doesn't have a lot of pest pressure. And so far we find that to be the case. However, we haven't grown it for about 80 years, and the ecology may have changed. So our system is no longer hemp heavy, right? And we've been growing things that encourage more corn diseases and soybean diseases. So if we do start rotating in hemp, maybe we'll also increase the amount of disease and bug pressure as a result of giving them something to eat. But so far, we haven't found too much that's very concerning. I'm a plant pathologist, so I care about the diseases. And the only disease I was able to observe out there was a leaf spot that is a Cercospora leaf spot. And so Cercospora is a fungus that has different species, and some infect corn and some infect soybeans. And this one is more specific for hemp. Now, that's not really important for us when we're trying to produce seed if it comes in late enough to not impact yield. And it's not necessarily that important for us if we're trying to produce fiber. But if we're trying to produce cannabidiol oils, that might be a problem for us because it reduces the amount of leaf tissue that's healthy and green. The other issue we've been seeing, especially in this really wet year, is botrytis. And that is something that's been called gray mold in other crops. So botrytis is seen in flowers and it's seen on fruits like grapes. And so it's really common. It's in the environment all the time. And it really likes dying flower tissue. And the flower tissue gives it a delicious place to eat and infect. And whenever you have a plant that's going to flower, the tissue eventually senesces and dies, and that gives it a good home. What we don't want to happen is for that to take place too early before the plant makes its seed. And we're seeing some of that out there, but it might not be problematic enough to really warrant any sort of fungicide application.
Are there organic controls that would help?
There are some more organic controls being developed. They probably wouldn't be economical for a field situation like this. There are some botrytis controls that are used in the greenhouse industry that are priced as such. And, you know, we don't want farmers to break the bank if they don't have to apply something. Maybe we will be able to learn that in the next few years.
What was harvesting like? What equipment did you use?
Yeah, so because we run small plots, we only had about an acre of hemp total. And our plots are about 5 feet by 20 feet. And so we have really small equipment here. We have a tiny little combine that you sit on top of and you get to run through a plot, and it only takes a width of about 3 feet. And so we harvest with like a small grain reel, and that has been working fairly well so far. It's not perfect. This crop does give us a lot of shatter because the head doesn't mature all at the same rate. So you've still got some over-mature seeds and you've got some really green seeds. So you have to kind of shoot for the middle and know that you're going to have some loss.
And it just falls to the ground.
And it falls to the ground, that's right. And so you should expect some volunteer plants too. And we've got some little baby plants out there right now that have germinated. And the other real pest issue that I forgot to mention is birds. So the birds, especially mourning doves and goldfinch, love this crop. And if you look at a lot of birdseed mixes, you will find hemp in there, and there's a reason for that. So when I go to the field to make some observations, get some data, usually I'm scaring a flock of either doves or goldfinch out. And I've never seen a flock of goldfinch before, but this has created that situation in our field. So I don't know how much we're losing to birds, but I have a feeling it's kind of significant. Yeah. Our harvest methods are probably not the same as a lot of growers would use because we work in such small scale. But you can do a decent job of getting that seed off the field with a reel on a regular standard combine. We're working in the future on trying to find different ways of harvesting and decortication, which is the processing of that fiber. We're working with an ag engineer in the college now to kind of develop some ideas about that and see what we would like to do next year to explore it.
When farmers come here to visit the research farm, what questions do they have about industrial hemp?
When farmers come to visit, they have really practical questions, which makes a lot of sense because this is a crop that we haven't seen for a long time. We know we can grow it. We've, you know, been very good at growing things here in Lancaster County for a long time. And so that's not the question. It's, is there going to be a market for me first? And after that, after they learn that, they start drilling down on the details of what's important. You know, what is, how are we going to plant this? How do I need to prepare the field? What pitfalls should I expect? And then finally, what, how am I going to harvest this and who am I going to sell it to? And these are all really important questions that we don't have all the answers to yet. There's a lot of places to explore that even though we did farm this a long time ago, it's a whole new world now. We've got different equipment. We've got better ways of doing things that we just need to test out one by one and see what works the best. Farmers are really industrious and they will find this out on their own. But part of the reason we exist is so that we can spend our time and money and resources on it and answer as many of the questions as we can before it gets to their field.
Is there anything farmers could be doing now to prepare themselves or their operations?
I think the best thing they could probably be doing now is to try and get their information from a lot of different sources on this crop. There's a lot of hemp evangelists right now who are really excited about the crop and the production of this material. And that's great because we need those people to drive the market and drive the industry forward. But no one person is an expert in all aspects of a crop or a production system. And so when we talk to people, you know, they have their thing that they're interested in and they probably know a lot about that, but they don't know the whole system. So try and get information from a lot of different sources. Go to, you know, extension resources, we have those, but then also go to people who have been doing it for a while. Like there are folks in France and China and Canada who have grown this crop before, and we're trying to learn from them as extension professionals too. So places where this crop has been legal, farmers have been doing a lot of work in harvest techniques and varieties. Not all of those techniques and varieties will translate well here in the Mid-Atlantic. So for instance, the varieties we've been working with out of Canada, they tend to be pretty short for us here and flower quickly. And we might do better with varieties that put on a little more biomass and have a longer growing season available to them because we have that advantage over Canada. And we would also like to use our varieties to shade out weeds a lot more. So we'll be working with that and trying to optimize the conditions of Pennsylvania and figure out what fits our system the best, because it probably won't be exactly the same as, say, Canada, and it won't be the same as Kentucky, where they're doing a lot of industrial hemp too.
So how do you see this crop fitting into the general agricultural economy?
If we can, I'm thinking that we probably need some help from our state government in order to push this industry forward and create opportunities economically, both for entrepreneurs in Pennsylvania, but also for farmers, because it won't materialize on its own. We might need to see some help from our government in that direction. But if that happens, and if the 2018 Farm Bill allows for it, I see a great opportunity here, especially in Pennsylvania, where we were the hotbed of hemp production for so long. We have great soils. We know that this can be a good crop for us. This might be a good opportunity to replace tobacco for those farmers who would like to do that, because it doesn't seem to require too much in the way of changing equipment. We might be able to utilize tobacco drying barns, and we just need to do a little bit more testing to find out how that'll work. but it might be a good rotational crop for those farmers who are interested in introducing something new into a corn bean rotation. It might give us the opportunity to use as a forage crop or a bedding crop, and you get double duty then out of that crop. And farmers, like I said, are very curious, and they do a lot of their own experimentation, and they will figure out how this works into their personal system. We just need to give them the tools to do that.
Does the marijuana stigma matter?
I think the marijuana stigma is holding back the industry a little bit, because most people don't have a good concept of how this fits in to drug culture and how it differs from that plant. And unfortunately, it doesn't differ very, very much. I explain it to people in terms of there are different varieties of the same species of plant, right? Just like there are Granny Smith apples and there are Fuji apples. Those are the same species, but they're a different variety. They have a different chemical makeup, and that's what makes them taste different. That's what makes them visually look a different color. The same is true for this crop. So the difference between the industrial hemp and the varieties of marijuana is simply varietal. We've bred one plant to be different than the other chemically. And so it's very difficult for people because it looks and it smells just like marijuana. So I know this is going to be challenging because marijuana has so much political baggage, and therefore so does industrial hemp. But if we can get past the stigma, and if we can do some education, and if our lawmakers allow for it, I think we can probably get around that now because our testing is so much better than it was when it was first banned in the 30s. We now have the ability to test the plants almost in the field, not quite, but it doesn't take that long to get a test back. And the other part of it is, you know, folks, it's not going to be economically viable for folks to even hide marijuana in an industrial cannabis field because of the cross-pollination issues. So because the industrial hemp varieties tend to flower sooner than the marijuana varieties, it will actually serve to dilute the potency of medical marijuana marijuana that is grown for that purpose. So it's not going to be really a great idea for a person to do it anyway. So there's a number of things that are different now than they were in the 30s that give us an opportunity now to introduce this crop back.
Have you worked with law enforcement in any of your research?
Yeah, so a lot of folks come to us from different sectors. So we have been doing education with farmers, but also with business people, with ag lenders, so that they can understand this crop if their farmers want to get involved, but also law enforcement, because we want our police officers who might be encountering this crop to understand what they're dealing with, understand the background, the uses, and also how it's going to work with the system they have to detect illicit substances. So we've been working with the state police drug task force to answer a lot of their questions about the crop. And they're very interested in helping to make sure that this fledgling industry gets to continue and isn't interrupted because of law enforcement, but also making sure that they can detect marijuana when they need to. So we've been working with the folks who do the drug testing and who work with the canine units. And we've been providing them samples in order to bring back to their testing program and see what will trigger those testing, trigger the dogs to alert. And so far, they're seeing some pretty interesting results. They're not through the testing yet, but it's not exactly what we expected it to be. We expected this to, you know, raise all the red flags, but some forms of the plant don't seem to be raising all the red flags. But it's a little preliminary to be able to share that with anyone. Just suffice to say that they're actively working with us to get samples so that we can make sure they're prepared in the field for what they're going to encounter, and so no farmers end up in the back of a cruiser.
Okay, so let's say the 2018 Farm Bill passes, and it's already a few days late. So what does that mean? Hemp will just be legal to grow? You won't need a permit? What do you know about that?
I'm probably not the person to ask about all the legal intricacies about the potential for the 2018 Farm Bill. As a researcher, I'm hoping the Farm Bill allows for certain things, like being able to run feeding experiments with poultry and cattle to see if we can use this as potential feed for those industries. I'd like to see some leeway for being able to test cannabidiol oils clinically so that we can see if they do have any clinical effects. People are very interested in that particular fraction of this plant, and that is where a lot of the industry is interested, and therefore a lot of farmers are interested in producing for that industry. So as a scientist, I'd really like to see some real research that, you know, maybe it's not going to support all the claims, but it will give us an idea of, you know, what markets this would be good for, and at least give farmers that ability to possibly grow for this market.
Okay, so how can farmers avoid getting the short end of the stick when it comes to industrial hemp?
So, I like this question that you ask everyone. Because that's what this is about, right? This is Lancaster farming, not Lancaster processing BMW parts. Here's what I worry about for farmers. I worry about claims of this being a miracle crop that's disease free and you know, you don't need to use fertilizers, and increasing everyone's expectations to the extent where we're overextended. I worry a little bit about business people who've never been involved in an agricultural venture establishing partnerships with farmers, but the farmers bearing the brunt of that risk, because business folks don't always understand the pitfalls of farming. I worry about CBDs becoming legal and then the market becomes flooded. I'm concerned about CBDs not becoming legal and then the push forward for this industry loses momentum. I'm also worried about varieties testing high in THC and then farmers having to destroy the entire crop. So those are the things I kind of concern myself with and worry about for farmers who are excited about this crop. And I don't want anyone to get taken advantage of. At the same time, I don't want to see the momentum of this crop slow down, because I think we're at a really critical time for this crop to move forward in processing and marketing. And I want to see that continue. But in order to do that, people need to put in more acreage so that we have the incentive to put in a processing plant. So it's a chicken or the egg situation. And I want farmers to make sure they're educating themselves from several sources of information because of that. Because I'm not the expert on everything. The person who is processing this crop is not the expert in agronomy. And if we source from a lot of places and we start to see the same things, the same information, the same bits, nuggets of wisdom come from a lot of different places, well, then that should tell us that that may have some truth to it. So I caution farmers against starting too big too quickly because of a lot of hype. At the same time, I want farmers to give it a try and see how it might work into their scheme.
Can you speculate a time frame? Like, when will this industry be on its feet?
Oh, that's a time frame is a little bit difficult because there's so many moving parts of this crop and this industry. For another crop, it would be different. This crop has so much political baggage that it makes it difficult to anticipate. Okay, let's say the 2018 Farm Bill comes through and it allows you to do whatever you want. You know, this is a normal crop, you can grow it like corn. Well, that opens up all kinds of opportunities for growers, but then it opens up the opportunity for producers of the secondary and final products of this crop. If that were to happen, we might be up and running in 10 years. If that doesn't happen, which we don't know, it would be longer, I'm sure, because everyone's personal risk aversion is different in an entrepreneurial setting. But then you have the added complication of, well, how legal is it? And who's going to want to invest in me? Who are the ag lenders I'm going to be able to work with? How am I going to be able to market this crop? And can it cross the borders of the state? Who are our trading partners going to be in this? There's so many unanswered questions. And, you know, as Penn State crop science, we answer the agronomic ones. But I can't help but try and anticipate what some of the other answers to these are going to be, because it affects what we do in agronomy.
Is there anything else you want to talk about? What am I forgetting to ask you? Any final thoughts?
You know, 80 years ago, this region was a hotbed for hemp production, and we need to figure out why. We've got great growing conditions, but we've got great growing conditions for most crops here. What's different now is infrastructure. We have a totally different infrastructure than 80 years ago. And that's a big question mark. So I think we need to get back to having infrastructure to support this industry, but it's going to be in 21st century terms rather than early 20th century terms. Because it's very different. And I'm a little bit worried that other states like New York, who's investing in this industry, might leapfrog us because of their efforts. So I think...
Lots of competition.
Right. Lots of competition from other states who have recently made this sort of legal.
Well, Dr. Collins, thank you so much for talking to us today.
My pleasure. Thank you for coming.
And thank you all for listening. Don't forget to click subscribe in the iTunes podcast app so you don't miss anything. And be sure to send me questions or comments to podcast@LancasterFarming. I look forward to hearing from you. And in the meantime, we'll see you in the newspaper.